Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into Redacted on this Tuesday. I'm Clayton.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on Redacted News, what we'd like to do is give voice to those independent journalists who do amazing work that the mainstream media largely ignores. We've got a jam-packed show tonight with many great guests and independent journalists, academic researchers, best-selling authors. We've got a very, very busy show. We're going to start tonight, though, talking about the war in Ukraine because Vladimir Putin has just laid down basically a request. We'll show you what that request is. Hey, Ukrainian men, if you want to live, now's your chance to surrender, wave the white flag, and you will live. Otherwise, you are about to die. A massive assault could be about to unfold in Ukraine. We're already seeing troop movements on the northeast part of the Ukraine, and reports are that things are about to turn very, very bloody. We'll get to that in just moments.
We're also going to bring you an update on Syria and what seems to be escalating tensions there, where the United States is illegally occupying. They are not welcome there, but they are there anyway. We also are going to talk to Ollie London, who released a new book about gender ideology from his own experience as someone who had over 30 surgeries trying to meet an ideal that does not exist. And I'm excited to bring you that update of this updated book, plus a new research that shows that paper straws have more toxins than plastic straws. We're doing it wrong, guys.
What a boondoggle.
Yeah, this one, wait for it, because there's some stuff there. If you are one of those who are like, I hate these paper straws, but they're better for... Nobody likes them,
yeah,
right?
Does anybody... Here's
nobody
a poll.
Likes
can we
them.
Put up a poll? Do you like... David, can we put up a poll here before the show starts? And we'll get to it later, a little bit later in the show. How many... Do you like paper straws? Yes or no? When those paper straws rolled out, and they started like looking like a limp, like...
Yeah,
after about 20 minutes of using it, it's like,
well, it turns out they turn into a soggy mess and you are drinking forever chemicals with them.
God.
Yeah. All right. We're going to have a whole talk about it.
All of that and more as Redacted starts right now. My favorite poll we've ever done. We put it up and immediately it jumped to no. 93%
people say no. 8% that likes paper straws.
Yeah, people are like, yeah, I really enjoy these paper straws. Who's that? There's always going to be like 8%, 5%. Who are these people?
They didn't understand the question.
I can't stand
that button and go.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead.
I can't stand having paper straws in my mouth like this. The feeling against my lips. I hate it.
No, yeah,
I can't stand it.
It's like nails on a chalkboard for me.
Really?
I always think about licking newspaper or licking cardboard. Gives me that feeling of fingernails on a chalkboard. So I hate it.
How do you know what licking newspaper is like?
Well, you know,
I was a paper boy.
You've never licked a newspaper?
Why?
You've never licked a newspaper?
Newspapers?
You didn't. I was like, I don't know, 10
Under
years.
What circumstances?
10 years old, I had like a newspaper route, and you're like flicking through and you're like getting pieces in your mouth. Like, it's just inevitable that you're like licking newspapers. I mean, now I do it at night to calm down.
Okay.
No, I don't know. You just, you inadvertently do it.
I don't know,
you
guys.
You inadvertently do it.
Yeah. And so, you know what I also really hate are those paper coffee tops. Now that they don't use the plastic Starbucks, toppers, Now, some of those in certain countries are paper. We had one when we over Christmas time, and I was like, this also is BS. I'm not for it. We're not helping anybody out. If you think you're doing it for the turtles, you're wrong. And we're going to bring you that story later today.
All right. We're going to get to all your news in a moment, but I want to tell you about our daily newsletter. We do have a daily newsletter that we publish first thing in the morning. It's, all of the kids say, like, when you go to the mall and the kids are, like, complaining about paper straws, they're probably sitting there. They're also talking about the redacted newsletter. They're all sitting there. Just sneak up on some kids hanging out at a Starbucks at the mall or something, and you're going to hear them talking about how great the redacted newsletter is. They read it first thing in the morning. All the kids are doing it. All you need to do is go to redacted.inc, not .com, and just put in your email address, and you'll receive a welcome email from me. It'll come from my email, clayton@redacted.inc, and say hello to me, by the way, and I will say hello back if I can. Then tomorrow morning, first thing in the morning, you will receive the actual newsletter, which looks like this. We kind of say, start off a little bit at the top with a little interesting story, and we kind of cover things you might have missed while you were sleeping. We cover some of the markets, what's going on with gold and silver, what's happening with the stock markets, and then we cover some of the big stories of the day as well. About 4 or 5 of those big stories. And, you can read it in about 5-10 minutes over your cup of coffee. So again, it's totally free. It's our way to stay connected with you because these platforms love to censor us, but you also get an amazing newsletter. Anyway, redacted.inc is the place to go to sign up, and you will receive the newsletter tomorrow morning around 7 a.m. Eastern time. So please subscribe. All right. And I should mention this. I saw a friend of ours who has a YouTube channel today. He said, he notices a dramatic difference. He notices a dramatic difference when people smash the like button. And because when you're live, it pushes you further out into the algorithm. YouTube loves to suppress our shows. They love to block us. They did it twice this week already. They've already blocked us twice this week with certain content. Age restricted it. They don't want you to know what's going on in Ukraine. They don't want you to know what's going on with COVID. A story we did last night has already been blocked because of we covered COVID. We covered the new vaccines they're planning on foisting on all of this. So anyway, if you smash that like button during the live show, it actually pushes it out further into the algorithm, and it helps us get some a little bit maybe more eyeballs who might not otherwise see the show. So, and it's free, if you wouldn't mind. Please do that. I'd appreciate it. Right?
That's right.
That's right. Absolutely. All right, let's get to your top story then. Enough kibitzing. Let's talk about what's happening in Ukraine. And something big is about to happen in Ukraine as Russia seems ready to pull off the gloves. Now, according to multiple reports in the northern part of the country in Ukraine, Russia is gearing up for a massive offensive. But before they do that, they're rolling out a brand new ad campaign. This is a Russian ad campaign giving Ukrainians one last chance to save their lives before the full-scale invasion happens. They're hoping that people will share this all over Telegram, all over Twitter, all over social media channels, so that young men who have been like hiding from these conscription officers who's coming around and rounding them up and throwing them into the meat grinder will see these videos and they'll say, we will surrender. We are not going to be a part of this. I'm not going to go off to die. So this is a Russian ad campaign. Do you want to send your boys off to die in a meat grinder? Or do you want to end this peacefully and surrender? Russia says, surrender to us now and you will live. Otherwise, you are about to die. Watch.
Ось він, твій контрнаступ. Ти вважав, що у тебе багато шансів зберегти життя. Але ти не захотів тікати з країни у жіночій сукні. Мамі не вистачило грошей, щоб дати хабара. А батькові не допомогли старі зв'язки. Ти намагався сховатися, але їм треба м'ясо. Бо леопарди їм жаль. І своїх дітей їм жаль. А тебе – ні. Тепер у тебе лише один останній шанс зберегти життя.
Was that a thing? I never had any reports about that men dressed up as women in order to flee the country?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We covered that here on the show.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, going to the border, and some were being captured, and they were, like, being exposed as having this clothing on and dressing up as women to escape. So absolutely happened, and we covered it here on the show. And so, you know, and I think the bribing piece of this is also fascinating.
That right?
You know about. You don't have enough money to bribe these officials, these conscription officers. You don't have enough money being paid under the table. Then, sorry, you're going to be taken out. And
we know about that because Zelensky has said he's cracking down on it recently. Right. Yes.
So Russian forces, this is an amazing piece of video, right? I mean, I saw some people in the chat saying they saw this posted earlier today when it came out. And we hope, you know, you hope that this gets shared all over the place. Not just on our show and on Telegram and other places, Signal, wherever people are going to share this stuff. Get it out there. Get this message out there because you have an opportunity now for peace. You have an opportunity now to surrender and end this.
You have an opportunity to not die.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's exactly what's about to happen.
And you don't owe your life to this conflict. Nobody does.
You don't owe your life to NATO. Let's be clear. Once again, this is not about Ukraine. It's about NATO using Ukraine to the very last Ukrainian. You do not have to give your life up for NATO and the United States, and they are using you at every turn. Russian forces are now regrouped. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, think about how that video is going to resonate with the people that were taken and put in there forcefully and are there against their will. Like, I hope they see that because Russia's saying, we understand what happened. We understand you don't want to be here. We're putting out an arm to help you and get you out of this.
Right. Here's our white flag. We're raising the white flag. I saw this video. I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Mike Jones has been talking about, redacted correspondent Mike Jones has been talking to a lot of surrendered Ukrainian generals and troops that are in Russia being well cared for, rehabilitating there. He has been offering to bring us a lot of that footage because it's more common than you think. We're just not allowed to see it.
So Russian forces are now regrouping and sending in reinforcements in preparation for their big offensive. So now would be a great time, by the way, to surrender so more people don't die. Here's Radio Free Europe. Today, Ukraine, Russian reinforcing troops ahead of a renewed offensive in the tent east, according to Ukrainian generals. Ukraine is admitting that Russia is reinforcing its positions, but the Western media continues to spin things. Ukraine is being destroyed any way you try to spin the story, Western media, but they will try. I love this headline today from the Daily Mail. Russia deploys its best fighting unit to the front lines in desperate bid to halt Ukraine advance as counteroffensive achieves breakthrough. A desperate bid.
Okay.
Okay. And Russia is having trouble stopping Ukraine's advance? What world are they living in? Ukraine's offensive is nearing 3 months right now of fighting and has yet to breach even Russia's first line of defenses. And several defensive lines are deep. And witnesses say that when they approach the front lines, they are literally being utterly destroyed. This is the front line, not even the second or third line, the very front. As former UN weapons inspector Scott Ritter just told me recently, he said they're doing virtually nothing to hit Russia's first lines of troops. And they're being, it's just a bloodbath. Watch.
Look, Ukraine started this counteroffensive around June 8th. They did so using forces that were trained by NATO, equipped by NATO, and they failed miserably. About a week and a half into the counteroffensive, 2 weeks, Ukraine realized that it can't sustain this. So they stopped using the tactics that they were trained by NATO. They started using their own adaptations, which were basically infantry-driven, designed to, you know, move forward in small infiltration groups, seize areas, and exploit. They had limited success. They never reached the first Russian defensive line, but they could say, hey, look, we took this village, we took this street, we took this tree line. But they were suffering horrendous casualties. But then the Vilnius summit came, and NATO put Ukraine on notice. We're not going to sit here and supply you so you can take a house, so you can take a street, so you can take a tree line. You said you wanted to take Melitopol. We gave you equipment that you said you could accomplish that mission, and now you're not doing it. So do you want us to help you or not? And so Ukraine's had to go back to these massed armored assaults, and that's what we're seeing right now. They're sending battalions of armor in to a kill zone where the Russians are decimating them, destroying them. It's mass murder is what's happening on the battlefield right now.
So don't believe Scott Ritter. Well, you don't have to. Then listen to General Cavoli, who was asked about Russian forces in front of Congress. Remember, he's in charge of the entire theater of war in this area, and he says Russia isn't being hurt at all.
First of all, sir, if I could, I'd like to underline your comment about the specificity of the degradation of the Russian forces. Much of the Russian military has not been affected negatively by this conflict. One of those forces is their undersea forces. It's hard to talk in public, as you well know, sir, about undersea warfare and our efforts in that regard. But I can say that the Russians are more active than we've seen them in years, and their patrols into the Atlantic and throughout the Atlantic are at a high level. Most of the time, at a higher level than we've seen in years. And this is, as you pointed out, despite all of the efforts that they're undertaking.
Yeah, so not degraded at all. And in fact, enhanced and doing more than ever before. So then how does a piece of propaganda like this even make it past the muster, like at the Daily Mail? Russia deploys its best fighting unit to the front lines in desperate bid to halt Ukraine advance. Okay.
Because they won't show us a map. They won't show us a war map. So we can just sort of think that all of Ukraine is a battleground and that, you know, if they say that certain cities or certain progress is being made, then we believe them because we're not acutely watching what actually is being fought for. That's why.
So here is that.
Well,
map.
Then what does it?
Go ahead, Tim.
Well, real quick. And what does that say that we've sent Ukraine basically Russia's annual military budget? And we've not even put a dent with that much of a military force in their military.
Yeah, and an entire generation of young men destroyed in Ukraine. I mean, numbers now over 400,000 killed, over 2 million casualties, injured, permanently disabled. That's the future of Ukraine right there. And NATO loves it. NATO's getting exactly what they want from this, using Ukraine.
Yeah, so why should we care if it happened to Afghanistan and... You know.
Yeah. So here is that map that we were talking about. And this is such an important map to talk about here. So what you're seeing on your screen is the map of what was formerly eastern Ukraine, the Donbas, which is basically what the fighting is all about. This is an area that since 2014 has been continuously shelled by Ukraine and hitting innocent civilians in those areas and killing them in a genocide that's been happening since 2014. And once the Minsk agreements that were put in place were not honored by Ukraine to leave these people alone, Russia launched their special military operation back in February of 2022 and moved into this area and took that area over. Now, all of those people in that area, overwhelmingly, I think it was over 90% of the vote, voted to become part of Russia. And they do not want to have anything to do with Ukraine. But the Western media will not show you this map. They will not explain what's actually happening. And those people in that eastern part, which was formerly Ukraine, is now part of the Russian Federation, don't want to have anything to do with Ukraine. And so the people, you know, what's happening with these attacks on the people in the Donbas, you're basically killing people that want to have nothing to do with you. So how are you going to win back the hearts and minds of the people in the Donbas? By killing them? That's the way to do it? Like, we're going to take back this territory. We're going to take back Crimea. We're going to take back the Donbas, and we're going to hit Donetsk. How? Because we want that territory back. We want those people to love us. Here's how you love the. Here's how we get you to love us. We're going to bomb your apartment complex and kill your mom.
Well, it's a if I can't have you, nobody can.
And that's what's happening.
Yes.
So it's important for people to understand where the fight is. It's right there in eastern Ukraine, right along this front, and NATO does not want this territory to fall to Russia. And it's, you know, now Russian Federation. So that's the update out of Ukraine this evening as this new ad campaign rolls out. We'll see what this portends before this massive military advance that seems to be unfolding on the part of Russia. We've got more news to get to here on your Tuesday. We're going to look at Syria next. Vanessa Bealey is going to be joining us, one of the great journalists of the world. An excellent independent journalist, and that's one of the things I'm so proudest of having this show is being able to, being able to feature and have amazing journalists like Vanessa on our show, and hopefully get a message out that the mainstream media will largely ignore. So we're going to talk about the bombings that have been happening in Syria and this new move by the United States to antagonize and to try to destabilize Syria So we'll get to that in a moment.
Plus, we're going to talk to Ollie London about gender ideology and how it's reaching deeper and deeper into childhood. And we are going to talk about plastic straws and how they are actually more paper straws and how they're more toxic than plastic straws. We have a poll going on right now. Vote on that poll. 88% of people say they do not like paper straws. I want to talk to you 12% and ask, what's wrong with you? We will get there. We're going to get there. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Upside, because every year we all pledge to save more and spend less. But how are you supposed to do that when you're paying inflated prices for everyday essentials like gas and groceries? You can't just cut those purchases out of your budget. But now, thanks to this 2023 money back hack, you can get some of that cash back with Upside. Upside is an incredible app for anyone who buys gas, groceries, or dines out. With Upside, you get cash back on every purchase. So it's almost like, you know, if you're like me where you get a loyalty card, let's say at BP, and then you get a loyalty card at Target, and then you get a loyalty card at Michael's, and then you just run around and you're like, oh, let me see, which one do I have points with? Which one am I gonna use right now? Well, it's almost like you have them all in one place. Because with Upside, you can use this with every purchase instead of just collecting all of those cards so your keychain looks like a janitor. You know, it's really our secret for staying on track with savings goals. You can get started by downloading the free Upside app and use our promo code REDACTED to get an extra 25 cents back for every gallon on your first tank of gas. And next, you can claim an offer for whatever you're buying on Upside, then pay as usual with a credit or debit card, and then follow the steps in the app, and you get paid. So it turns all of your purchases into loyalty purchases instead of just, you know, one-off store by store. Plus, Upside doesn't sell your personal information to third parties, which a lot of times you know is happening when you join these, you know, store by store loyalty programs. They know that information is vital and it's part of their trusted relationship with you. So download the free Upside app and use promo code REDACTED to get an extra 25 cents back for every gallon on your first tank of gas. That's an extra 25 cents back for every gallon on your first tank of gas using promo code REDACTED. So one more time, go and look for the Upside app and use promo code REDACTED.
Well, get ready for a whole new round of propaganda coming at the hands of Western countries against Syria. Has the rest of the world turned a blind eye to what's actually happening in Syria? We haven't. Vanessa Bealey, independent journalist and one of the great journalists of the world, has been following very closely what's happening and about to unfold in that country. The United States has a long history of teaming up with ISIS to destabilize Syria, carrying out terrorist attacks over the years in Syria, particularly northern Syria. But is something about to unfold in southern Syria that we need to be prepared for? Vanessa Bealey joins us now on the show to talk about Syria and go over what is actually happening there. Vanessa, welcome back to the show. Great to see you.
Oh, hi, Clayton. Thanks for having me on. It's a very dangerous time for Syria, so it's good to be able to talk about what's going on.
Yeah, the West is totally ignoring what's actually happening there right now, but some really big movements are happening. We want you to detail it for us. And I think one of the clearest indications that something is happening is you have three Republican members of U.S. Congress, like, suddenly showing up in Syria. You know, something's going on here. Can you lay the groundwork for what's happening here?
Yeah, well, I mean, you mentioned that, so I'll start off with that. So you had French Hill, Ben Klein, and Scott Fitzgerald, of course, not the author, the congressman, who entered Syria illegally through Turkish territory in the north at the crossing that is known as Bab al-Salameh, which is under the control, actually, this is interesting, of two terrorist groups that have come under sanctions by the U.S. very recently. So I wonder how that kind of plays out from a law perspective under the U.S. Terrorist Act when they go back home. In the northwest, of course, you still have effectively the domination by Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or as it was previously, ISIS, and then al-Qaeda under the same leadership. Abu Muhammad Julani has been basically prepared for being presented as the opposition figure by the West, particularly by PBS, Martin Smith, and then more recently by France 24, who interviewed him in Idlib. Israel has bombed in the last 2 days Aleppo International Airport, which is really predominantly a civilian airport that had just welcomed West Asian businessmen to Aleppo for a manufacturing fair, a trade fair that was being held in Aleppo to show the kind of rejuvenation of the city after its occupation by Western-backed terrorist groups. In the northeast, the U.S. has been basically ramping up its activity and its military footprint. We believe there's anything between 2,000 and 3,000 actual military personnel and contractors now on the ground inside northeast Syria. Of course, from there, what they've done is to trigger ISIS brigades. They've formed new military or militia brigades made up of former Free Syrian Army, which is effectively Muslim Brotherhood extremists, and ISIS, we know through the mountains of evidence that point to it, that is another U.S. proxy. ISIS, since the earthquakes in February, on February the 6th, have been carrying out concerted attacks against Syrian Arab Army positions, against oil convoys, against civilians, kidnapping civilians, as well as massacring them in central Syria, where the U.S. has actually recently reestablished a former military base in central Syria, from which we presume it is controlling the ISIS operations against particularly Syrian military. There was a massacre of more than 25 Syrian Arab Army soldiers in the last 2 weeks, dozens of others injured when their bus was attacked by ISIS to the east of the Euphrates. What the U.S. is trying to do is to close the last remaining land route from Iran through Iraq into Syria that particularly during the earthquake provided essential humanitarian aid and was regularly bombed and has been regularly bombed, particularly under the Biden administration. I think he bombed it within 24 hours or 24 days of inauguration and by Israel. So the U.S. wants to basically landlock Syria on the eastern flank and prevent the entry of any aid whatsoever. Of course, the U.S. is occupying Syrian oil, stealing it on a regular basis, as are the Kurdish Contras that are the other U.S. Proxy occupying Syrian territory in the northeast. And in the last few days, actually, the U.S. has bombed the last railway bridge in the northeast. And the Kurdish Contras have been basically uprooting the railway track and stealing it and trading it in Turkey. So essential infrastructure being completely destroyed, as of course it was in 2019, when the U.S. finally admitted that it bombed women and children in Bahuz. And it, of course, destroyed the majority of the bridges over the Euphrates in previous years. So then coming down to the southeast, I'm going around Syria as a clock. Coming down to the southeast, you have the U.S. Illegal military base in Al-Tanf, which is on the border with Jordan and Iraq. Now, in recent weeks, the U.S. has brought 7,500 militants from the north, from the Turkish-occupied territories, to Al-Tanf to train them with the intention to deploy them to the Syrian-Jordanian border to take control of the border. So again, to close off another land entry or border for Syria and Syrians. They've also been training 16,000 Druze militia. Now, Druze are an Abrahamic monotheistic sect that live in southern Syria in the area called Sweida. They also live in Lebanon and in Israel. There is a very small minority that is, with the backing of Israel and, of course, the U.S., looking for autonomy, very similar to the Kurdish project in the northeast, and a federalist project to separate them from the Syrian state and to create an independent statelet. Of course, this is part of the U.S.-Israeli cartel plan, which is to balkanize Syria and divide it into warring statelets. And this movement is, sorry, just quickly, this movement is basically now, of course, being power multiplied by the U.S. at Al-Tanf. And at Tanf, of course, they have this 55-kilometer exclusion zone in which the U.S. has established both training ground for various extremist groups, including ISIS, and a base for weapons. Even Israel has launched attacks from Al-Tanf because there it's protected by the U.S. Russia recently has been carrying out raids on the terrorist positions in and around Al-Tanf. But what we're basically seeing, just to summarize, is a resurgence of the kind of 2011 narrative of peaceful protests in the south, the desire to overthrow President Assad. UN officials are calling for resolution 2254, which is effectively regime change and political or interference in the political process in Syria.
And now you're starting to already see the propaganda pieces popping up. And this story is incredibly important. And, you know, for our audience that, you know, is not familiar with Syria, doesn't understand how it's being used as a proxy and what the United States has been doing in Syria, destroying this country. Beautiful country, one of the safest countries in the world up until 2011, and totally destabilizing this country, putting American troops and forces in there. And I think for most Americans, they can't even wrap their head around the idea that, wait a second, the United States is teamed up with ISIS and Al-Qaeda. We've covered this on the show for years. But yes, that's exactly what's happening. They're teamed up with ISIS terrorist groups to carry out terrorist attacks inside of Syria against civilian populations, terrorizing the people of Syria. And now you have Russia hitting these positions, hitting these actual terrorists that the United States has teamed up with. And you're seeing these pieces of propaganda that have popped up. Today, you sent me a message today. I love this one, where they're literally putting out propaganda pieces written in English. It's clear that these are coming from Western influences. This is not something that Syrian people would do, right? What do these posters, what do these posters say? These are clear pieces of propaganda from the West.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite incredible. I was scrolling through the Sawada 24, which is the kind of U.S.-Israel aligned media outlet in the region, in that southern region that we're talking about. And I saw these two images. And of course, they have the Otpor fist, raised fist, with the English language slogan next to it. Well, I mean, Otpor, of course, was a George Soros CIA incubated movement to destabilize Serbia back in the late 90s. So, I mean, as a few of my friends said, well, my goodness, you know, couldn't they find something original? I mean, it's crazy. And I mean, these people coming out on the street, they're relatively simple people. They're not going to know what Otpor is. They're not going to know what this kind of signaling means. And the other poster was talking about UN Resolution 2254. Well, I can guarantee that the average man in the street in Sweden is not going to really come, you know, think about writing in English about UN Resolution 2254, which, of course, is when you strip away the UN language, it basically means regime change.
Yeah. Right? So, yeah. Like protesters are going out in the street and they're somehow in favor of the United States teaming up with ISIS to terrorize their neighborhoods, and they're going to get poster board. And I mean, you know, I joked with you offline that this sounds like something that Victoria Nuland drew up in her garage with Sharpies. You know, this is the kind of stuff that we see. It's incredibly infuriating. The Russian response to this has been, of course, attacking some of these ISIS positions, hitting some of these terrorist positions. What do you think the broader Russian part of this story will be in the coming weeks?
Well, it's interesting because Russia has been showing a considerable display of force. And of course, Russia has been under provocation from the U.S. also. The U.S. has been deliberately violating kind of Syrian-Russian controlled airspace and coming very close to Russian jets with their drones and with their own aircraft. I think more than 340 infractions into the kind of safety measures that are put in place between the two countries inside Syria in 1 month. So they're clearly also trying to provoke Russia to react. Now, what Russia has been doing, of course, it's been with the Syrian Arab Army leading a campaign of bombing and artillery targeting of Al-Qaeda sites in the northwest. It also fired cruise missiles from its navy off the Tartus coast at ISIS positions in the Syrian desert, which that went on for a few days. And I think that was a very clear signal of force to the US to kind of try and dampen down the US enthusiasm to get to escalate militarily. And as I said, Russia has been bombing the terrorist positions in the area around Al-Tanf to try and reduce their effectiveness. But at the moment, of course, the Syrian government is wanting to try and negotiate, because what people also need to understand, this isn't a kind of a blanket movement. This is a very small minority of the population of this region in Syria that are being backed by pro-Zionist factions in Lebanon and, of course, in Israel, and by the U.S., and by French and UK intelligence agencies that have been working on this project for a number of months, and funded by Qatar to basically reignite what they hope is this call for regime change at a time that US sanctions have effectively pushed Syria into an economic free fall and depression, where civilians are living without electricity, without water, without food. Food prices are just skyrocketing, inflation, and so on. So in a way, they're taking the opportunity to ignite this now, because they perceive that the government is weak. They perceive that the civilians are ready to take to the streets again. And they're wrong, because actually the majority, and even the majority inside Sweda, are pushing back against the movement and saying, no, you know, we want territorial integrity. We are part of the Syrian state. Yes, of course, everybody wants more electricity, more water, more essential infrastructure, but they're not prepared to go back onto the streets and to set the whole 2011, bloodshed rolling again. But the danger is the number of militants that the US now has in position in Al-Tanf and in this area, and that includes ISIS, of course, that never really left the area.
Tens of thousands.
If they start to carry out, for example, targeting of civilians, as the U.S. regularly does, as they did in Maidan, as they did in Egypt, picking off civilians and then blaming it on the Syrian security service, that, you know, there may be all manner of black ops that might get played out in the next few weeks to try and really push this forward.
Well, that's why we're doing this segment right now, which is to bring awareness about this, right? This is the game. This is what they do, you know, target civilians and then try to blame it on the government and force a regime change. I mean, they're actively trying to do this now in Haiti, and they're doing this in Syria. So we're keeping a very, very close eye on it and making sure that we get this message out there. Don't fall for the propaganda. It's about to happen. So someone who's been doing an amazing job covering this is Vanessa Beely. We'll have your Substack and your information linked up in the show description below. People, please subscribe to Vanessa's great work. Follow what she's doing there in Syria. And any developments that you think need a voice, please bring them to us, and we will make sure that we cover it here on Redacted.
Thank you so much, Clayton. I really do appreciate it. And yes, people should be aware that the propaganda is incoming, and to understand that it's a very small minority that the U.S. is trying to turn against the Syrian state and the Syrian people again, you know.
I mean, if you could have told, like, the families of the victims of 9/11 that the United States is actively, you know, working hand in hand with Al Qaeda and ISIS, and they're brothers in arms. I mean, you would literally it would sound like something was, you were making this up. It was fabrication, but it's actually the case. Vanessa, great to see you. Thank you so much for the great work, and we'll let you get back to it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks so much to Vanessa for that. And thanks to all of you for subscribing and making sure you smash that like button and helping to support independent journalists like Vanessa, who does amazing, amazing journalism. We really appreciate that. We've got a lot more to get to here on the show. We're going to have Ollie London on the show. He's an expert on gender ideology, and he had over 32 surgeries to try to become a woman. Essentially, right?
Well, half of them were to become a woman. Half of them were for other reasons. He's got a really interesting story. He's one of the more popular detransitioners on the internet. And I think you'll appreciate hearing his perspective on, you know, because a lot of us watch this and we maybe just, we don't get it. Like, how do these things pull you in? And he's got a great story to share with us. And we also are going to talk about new study showing that plastic straws are actually less toxic than you think. And actually, paper straws are very toxic. We think we're solving a problem. We created a new one. We have a poll up right now asking you, how do you feel about paper straws? Do you like them? Paper straws are gaining now. When we launched the poll, only 8% of people liked them. Now 14%. I think you're saying that because you think it's the right thing to say. I don't think you actually like it.
Yeah. I think the plastic industry or the paper industry sent people in here as trolls to do that. I think
perhaps.
Psyop.
Yeah.
It's a psyop.
Nobody really likes them. It's like, you know, gluten-free bread. You don't like that. You tell yourself you like it because you think you should be eating it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I know this from experience. Okay, we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Someone in the chat. So yeah, please take it. We can't do the poll. They don't have a poll available yet on Rumble. We are live on Rumble as well right now. We can't do a poll there yet, can we? I don't think we can. Anyway,
I don't think so. I'm gonna look because they've added a bunch of features,
but I see your comments that paper straws are the worst, and you're right, the worst.
But we do have
like literally the worst. I'm gonna show you a chart that shows that they're the worst.
Calm down.
I cannot just calm down. I've spent a lot of time in my life thinking about straws.
Just relax, settle down over there. And also, yeah, so the poll is up on our YouTube channel. If you'd like to participate in the poll, you can right now. Someone in the chat asks, who asked this question? Trader Alex says, hey Clayton, are you not having any more reports from Patrick Kennedy? I think you mean Patrick Lancaster. And actually, we have a special exclusive report that will be released tonight, speaking with actual Russians about the war. So we're going to be releasing that special exclusive report tonight. And then Patrick is actually going to be joining us on the show, I believe, tomorrow. He is right there on the front lines right now. And I was talking to him today about, you know, what are you seeing in terms of troop movements? Because we're hearing about, of course, this massive buildup, this massive assault that's about to unfold from the Russian side. So we'll have an update on that tomorrow. So if that's who you're referring to, Patrick Lancaster, not Patrick Kennedy, yes, Patrick will be on the show.
And if there's someone interesting named Patrick Kennedy, we will consider that too.
Right. Yeah. Hey, well, I'm open to guests like that. All right. But first.
Okay. First, we want to tell you about our friends over at COVIDtaxrelief.org because they got a small retail business almost $80,000. COVIDtaxrelief.org got a manufacturing business nearly $250,000. And COVIDtaxrelief.org got a large distribution business almost $900,000. If you run a business, church, or nonprofit, and you paid your employees through all or part of the pandemic, you could qualify for up to $26,000 per employee through the government's CARES Act. But beware of clickbait or pay up front companies who make you do the work and then take a huge percentage of your refund. COVIDtaxrelief.org receives a low, reasonable commission only after you receive your refund. And with 300 CPAs and tax experts, no one is better at getting you the maximum benefit than COVIDtaxrelief.org. So visit them right now, COVIDtaxrelief.org, because this plan expires soon. Refund examples are not a guarantee and not all businesses qualify, but check it out. You have nothing to lose by just going over there and see. That's COVIDtaxrelief.org. One more time, that's COVIDtaxrelief.org. Ollie London is an expert on gender ideology and one of the more well-known detransitioners on the internet. He has had over 32 surgeries in his quest for perfection and had a really interesting wake-up call that he writes about in his new book called Gender Madness, One Man's Devastating Struggle with Woke Ideology and His Battle to Protect Children. I'm pleased that he's joined us on the show today. Thank you so much for coming.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Now, I know you from Twitter, and so I decided to pick up your book, and I did enjoy it. I finished it over the weekend. I found it to be fascinating because your story really validates a lot of the common themes around gender ideology that the left wants to deny. So homosexuality, internet addiction, and an uneven social support system because you had an absent father. I don't know if we'll use the word absent, but maybe less supportive than you would have liked. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Why do you think these topics are not the first things addressed when it comes to gender ideology, but instead swept under the rug?
Well, they really should be the first things that are talked about, because we have to look at when these children are being diagnosed with gender dysphoria. You know, it's very dangerous. They're being put on hormones and puberty blockers, but doctors aren't analyzing, why does this child feel confused? What is the driving force behind this? Is it an issue in the family home? Are they a subject to being bullied and they want to transition to try and fit in and gain attention? Is there something else? You know, are these kids struggling with autism or depression or another kind of condition that is giving them these thoughts? Because, you know, doctors, unfortunately, they don't check at these things anymore. They just say, oh, if you're questioning your gender, you are definitely a candidate to transition. And then they fast track these kids. So, you know, these are issues that I've been through myself. And I think it's very important for parents to be aware that, you know, there are underlying issues that do really, really push these kids to feel confused with their gender.
Now, one of the things I think you drive home so well that I think people who are for gender-affirming care just altogether ignore is that it's painful to do this to a human body. You really open up to the ways that you suffered for surgeries and, you know, trying to fit into clothes that were not made for you, trying to fit into groups that, like, it's painful emotionally and physically. Can you explain that a little bit more? Because I think you did a great job of that with the book.
Yeah, it's all consuming. So people that struggle with their gender identity, that's all they really think about from the moment they wake up to the moment they sleep. You know, it's very difficult to live a normal, healthy life and, you know, interact with social groups and, you know, even get work hard at a job because you are so consumed by these thoughts of I am not good enough. I hate the way I look. I despise my body. So this really is all consuming. And it's very sad. It's very similar in the way to anorexia and bulimia because a person that is struggling with anorexia, they are consumed by these thoughts and that's all they think about. No matter what other people tell them, they never feel good enough inside. So it's about kind of having a warped image of self. So, you know, I spoke a lot about that in the book and, you know, how I really struggled to accept myself through my teen years, through to adulthood. And, you know, how I eventually overcame that when I learned that, you know what, we need to learn what's inside. We need to love what's inside. We need to, you know, deal with these past traumas head on, think about them and think how can we move on from this and how can we be healthy? Because it consumes your mind, it consumes your body. And it really is sad to see so many kids, you know, losing themselves in this gender ideology.
Now, what do you think grabbed you later in life to lob onto transgender identity? Because you were a full-grown adult. And so were there certain themes on the internet? Was it sold as a solution to certain problems? Why do you think, what is it do you think was so sticky?
Well, so I had very, very bad body dysmorphia, as a teen and I was used to get bullied. So I really had an issue with my self-image. So that obviously into adulthood, you know, I'd always been more feminine than other boys, but into adulthood, you know, I started to just have surgery to try and transform myself and try to make myself feel better. And, you know, the more things you do to yourself, the more addicted you get to that. And then the more extreme it gets, the further along you go. So, you know, it really became an addiction to trying to change myself beyond repair. And then, you know, I was a big social media user. You know, now I just really use Twitter, but before I was all day on Instagram, all day on TikTok. You're always comparing yourself to others. And then when you suddenly start to see, you know, throughout the pandemic, you start to see constant videos of people sharing these different identities, very unusual identities and, you know, all sorts of things. Then you have these trans videos that are constantly pushed on the TikTok algorithm. You have, you know, Dylan Mulvaney always appears on everyone's algorithm. You know, he did block me at one stage, but, you know, I was being fed those videos every day and you think, you know, this person seems really happy. And we have to realize for many of these people, they are really suffering inside. So it's a facade. So, you know, I thought that I could be happy and by changing my gender identity, that would be the answer to all of my problems. And it's really not. It's just, you know, you're running away from your problems instead of actually addressing them.
Yeah, it strikes me like any other life-changing paradigm. You know, you think, oh, this is it. This is what I've been meant. And then you realize it sort of reminded me of about 4 years ago, I decided I didn't want to drink anymore. Now I rarely, if ever, drink. And I thought, this is going to really, you know, make my life so different from here on out. And my life is still pretty much as hard as it was before. And it's easy. You know, it's a lot the same. It's just I have to cope with those things differently. And so, you know, once you get something, you have a honeymoon phase with it, like with non-drinking is my comparison. And I assume that with transgender ideology, you might have this honeymoon phase where you think, this is it, what I've been looking for. And then you have to face something hard. That was very much the case in Chelsea Manning's biography as well. And so, you know, but what you say is that this honeymoon phase ends for a lot of people, and we ignore those people who detransition, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I experienced this honeymoon phase after I had my facial feminization surgeries, then I got the hair extensions and all of the women's clothes. So, you know, you feel great, because what happens in this honeymoon phase is you get so much validation and positive reinforcement. So all the people around you, society, are rewarding you for going through this change. You know, they are celebrating you as some brave hero. No, because you've simply said that you're a different gender. And I think that is, you know, very harmful in a sense, because it encourages behavior. So for me, for instance, you know, I lacked validation for much of my life. So when I suddenly had people praising me and saying, you look beautiful, this is who you're meant to be, it reinforces that way of thinking. So it's kind of dangerous to have that, because it pushes you further down this route, and, you know, it can push you through more extremities. You know, you might start taking hormones or surgeries because you are being rewarded and told by people, this is the right thing for you. So that is very harmful. But, you know, once this honeymoon phase is over, you know, a lot of people don't look to the future. So we see so many young people, they want something right now. They don't think about the long-term consequences. And that's the issue with medically transitioning, is because kids think, this is going to fix my problems. As soon as I have this surgery, I'm going to be a happy person. Suddenly I'm going to wake up and I'm going to be like Cinderella, I'm happy, you know. But it's simply not like that. You know, these effects wear off. And then, you know, you start to realize that, you know, this didn't actually fix my problems, and maybe I'm running away from something. Maybe I should have addressed these other issues that I'm dealing with instead of going down this really irreversible route.
Yes. Now, you say you never used women's bathrooms because you had this innate understanding that you were essentially not a part of that group, that you should not have been given access to those spaces. And now you speak out on behalf of those spaces. Can you speak more about that? Because that seems like something that we are told you should have had access to when you had the costume.
Well, you know, even though I transitioned, I knew I was trans. So I knew I wasn't a biological woman. So, you know, I did have some common sense. And I've always respected women. I've always, you know, most of my friends are women. You know, I was very close to my mom, so I've always had respect for women. And, you know, I know it makes them uncomfortable having a biological male, regardless of how they look, you know, going into their space. So I knew that was respectful. But it was also kind of funny. So when, you know, I go to the men's restrooms, people would think I was in the wrong restroom because I did look very feminine and stuff. And they would kind of say, excuse me, ma'am, you're in the wrong restroom. I'm like, no, I'm a guy. So, you know, you do have that confusion. But at the end of the day, you know, it was about respect, because women do not feel comfortable having somebody enter their space, you know, that's born biological male. So I did have that distinction. Even though I believed I was a trans woman, I knew there is a distinction between biology. And I think that's a very important thing a lot of trans activists seem to miss these days, is, look, if you're going to identify a certain way, nobody really has an issue with that. But you have to remember that you cannot change biology, and you're also not entitled to the rights of women just because you say that you're a woman and believe you are one.
Yes, but that experience also seems sad for you to have to explain that to a man in the bathroom. And so I think that speaks to a need maybe for third spaces. Do you have any opinion about that?
I mean, I definitely think there should be something, you know, because it's nice for everybody to be happy. Everybody should feel comfortable, you know, using a space. But I don't think the thing right now is having biological males in women's spaces is fair at all for women. So like you said, a third space option, or just say a gender neutral option for whoever feels comfortable using that, or just, you know, a single space toilet, you know, instead of just having women's or men's, just have like single space, so it's, you know, for whoever. But I don't think the approach right now is helpful for anyone, you know, because even you have genuine trans people, they are getting upset, they don't know what to do, and women are getting upset. So you have to have some kind of third option to please everyone.
Yes. And especially when my son got older and was not old enough to go into the bathroom by himself, but I was bringing him, then there's an age that's such a gray area and you're not sure if it's appropriate or not, but I wouldn't want him to go alone in certain places. Mm. So yes, you know, that might serve us all without these questions. Now you spend a lot of time, actually, no, I want to back out a little bit because I had not been aware of your background as a K-pop artist. And you talk a lot about how, you know, originally you started to have surgeries to ascribe more to the Korean aesthetic for your career. And what struck me is how these two things are not that different. This constant pursuit to mold yourself into something new. And that has to just be really exhausting, always being in a fight with your natural state, or always seeing like this needs to be changed, or what have you. You know, it would seem that we've lost our way at telling people to accept themselves as they are, as they age, as they, you know, their own culture and things like that. And so this has sort of led you into a career that's also talking about social decay in other ways. Can you speak to that natural evolution?
Yeah, so I really did battle for so long and I was very confused. You know, I basically wanted to erase any semblance of who I was. You know, I wanted to look like a completely different person. So I used to live in South Korea and there's so much pressure out there to look a certain way. They do over 1 million plastic surgery procedures a year. So, you know, everybody in that society has surgery in order to succeed, in order to feel confident and happy. So there's tremendous pressure. So that's when I started going for that aesthetic. You know, I was going to Korean doctors and getting that aesthetic. It, you know, made me feel great for a while. But then I realized, you know, I still wasn't happy. Am I misplacing these issues? And then that's when obviously questioning my gender identity came along because I was like, you know, I'm still not happy. Why have I not achieved happiness? So I thought, you know, maybe all my struggles are because of the gender thing. But, you know, now I've kind of looked at the world, you know, I've analyzed it from, you know, taking a step back. I used to be a part of that kind of woke world. I wasn't like super woke like these trans activists, but I was part of that woke world, you know, super liberal. And, you know, I've taken a step back now and I see that there is a general attack on the young generations to basically destroy them. They have no real chance, you know, because you see all of this woke culture, you have all the critical race theory being pushed in schools mixed with the gender ideology being pushed on very young schools. And, you know, you have that and then you have, you know, crime is increasing. A lot of kids these days, they just want to become influencers. So, you know, so many kids now are, I quote it in a study in the book, about 25% of kids want to become an influencer as a career. And, you know, that is not a sustainable career for many people. Kids just seem to think that, oh, I can get famous online, make loads of money and sustain yourself. It doesn't work that way. It's actually really, really difficult. So this is the generation that we live in now. They are obsessed with social media. They have very short attention spans. So with the social media obviously comes an increased pressure to want to change yourself. So not only with changing their gender, but you also see a lot of kids not feeling happy with the way they look and wanting to change themselves. You know, they see filters, they see celebrities. So you also have this increase of young people wanting plastic surgery. They are being conditioned to believe that they are never good enough. They are never going to look good in this life. They're never going to get anywhere unless they become famous. So that's kind of a sad thing that's happening right now.
Yeah, it is. And I think you did a really good job of speaking to what that's like, to, you know, going through the looking glass, I want to say, realizing that, you know, this path doesn't have to lead to sort of a general social decay. You know, you speak a lot for Gays Against Groomers and other LGB organizations that do not involve trans ideology because those things, those are two separate, disparate groups. Even the part where you talk about how you had a hard time finding relationships as a gay man because your partners found you too feminine. So then you thought, well, maybe this is not homosexuality. Maybe I'm just supposed to be a woman, which is in a way antithetical to homosexuality as a thing, right? And so I really appreciated that contradiction and how confusing that must be. So I would just want to thank you for sharing this story. Where can we find you online? And do you want to tell us any more about the book before I let you go?
Thank you. Yes. So I posted all on Twitter about exposing gender ideology, sharing news stories about what's going on in different legislation. So Twitter is at Ollie London TV, and everybody can get the book right now. It's on Amazon.com and all other book retailers. It's also available on an ebook version. Audiobooks out on September 1st. And the book is really, you know, talking about my struggles, but it's a story for everyone. Anyone that's got questions about themselves, whether it's gender or anything else, this book is about motivating people to get out of that dark mindset where you feel trapped, that you feel that you need to change all the time, and just learn to self-love. I think that's a really key message in the book. The second half of the book is all about kind of my research on studies out there that counter the claims made by these gender clinics, because they all too often like to say there's very limited number of detransitioners, this is safe, it's effective, there's no harmful effects. But I've actually got all the studies in my book that counter these claims and actually say, look, most teens grow out of this. We are misdiagnosing thousands of teens that are autistic. They are being transitioned, you know, instead of actually saying, look, they're struggling with their autism. How can we support them? So, you know, I'm talking about that in the book. And it's really a book for everyone, whether you're young and struggling or questioning yourself, whether you're a parent and you want to know the best approach to speak with your kid and try to make sure they're okay. Because, you know, it's every parent's worry these days is, you know, if their kid goes through this, it's really emotional for all of them. So trying to help them navigate that. And, you know, it's really a helpful book for everyone. So, yeah, Gender Madness available on all bookstores.
Right. And we didn't touch on your Christian awakening, which is also a fantastic story in the book that I'll just not give it away. We'll leave that as a cliffhanger. But you wrote it when you were, you know, it was pretty fresh in your mind. As you say, you had bottom surgery scheduled for 2023 this year. So you're not that far out of the clutches of this. And so I appreciate that you wrote it in this time and were able to share this. So it really was a pleasure to talk to you. Hopefully we can talk again sometime. Thank you so much for coming on Redacted.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Really, really interesting. And someone here in the chat, Sherry, says, thank you, Ollie, for never stop telling the truth that Jesus loves you more than you could ever know. Incredibly difficult subject, but warning parents about the absolute devastation that this causes is really
there's
great.
An interesting, I know I said I wouldn't give this away, part in the book where he just realizes he walks into a church and he's like, what am I doing trying to turn myself into something else? I'm not going to find myself there. And it literally was just, you know, the comforts of a religion that helped him to pull himself out of it. So if any of you want to read it alongside with me, let me know. Let me know your thoughts.
All right. Well, we've got more news to get to here on your Tuesday. We're going to talk about this paper straws. I saw someone in the chat saying we need more straw talk. So we're going to talk about this new paper straws study and pushing all of us towards paper straws and away from plastic. You'll be surprised at the results of this. Also, we're going to talk about censorship in the EU as the Digital Services Act is now enforceable. What will this do to free speech in Europe now that these bureaucrats get their hands on and their ability to partner basically with the governments right out there in the open? To come after you and censor speech that they don't like. It's happening. It's happening in Europe. It's happening in Canada. Where else is it happening? We'll get to all of that in just a moment here. But first, I do want to tell you about our friends over at Lear Capital, because right now, many of you know that we are in for some troubled times as it relates to inflation. We continue to see inflation numbers that are through the roof. Things are going to be running hot for quite the near future. And right now, gold-backed currencies, this is all the talk as we talk about BRICS, right? And our friend Kevin DeMeritt, who's the founder of Lear Capital, he's been on the show. We talked to him recently about what this BRICS expansion, these Brazil, Russia, China, India, South Africa, and now six additional countries joining BRICS to move away from the U.S. dollar dominance. What does this mean towards a gold-backed currency? It's a tremendous shift in the unipolar order that has been led by the petrodollar. So now we absolutely need to make sure that we are protecting our families and protecting our wealth, moving away from the U.S. dollar and into things like gold, silver, and real estate, real tangible assets that have been around for 5,000 years. These are not fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants asset classes. These have been tested through wars, famines, the collapse of governments. And our friends at Lear Capital can actually help you get set up and create a gold-backed self-directed retirement account that allows you to actually invest in gold and silver using a self-directed IRA. They can do this for you. And I want you to go over to LearRedacted.com right now, where you can get your free gold and silver kit as well, and you can learn about how to invest in gold and silver. And just put, it's not really about seeing like massive growth, like, oh my God, I'm going to, you know, this is going to go up in value so much. No, it's about taking $1 and converting it to a gold-backed dollar, you know, converting it to silver. I was having dinner recently with a father-in-law. We were talking about this, about, you know, he's a big silver and gold investor. And he said, I love knowing that my money is protected. And he's buying more silver right now, like Natalie and I just did. So go to LearRedacted.com. That's the place to go. Or you can call their 800 number, 1-800-613-3557. Again, 1-800-613-3557. Or go to LearRedacted.com. And, you know, your eyes will be opened to what you can do by investing and having some part of your family's finances in gold and silver. LearRedacted.com.
All right, let's talk about plastic straws. Now, this is something I have given way too much thought to, and you probably see that plastic straws are being phased out in single-use restaurants all around the planet, or at least especially in the West, the places that I've been. And you think, okay, good, because plastic straws pollute the planet, and plastic's bad for you, it leaches chemicals, right? And so we're better off with paper. Are we, though? Because a new study shows that paper straws contain forever chemicals in many orders of magnitude more than plastic. And so, you know, as I've gone through, so when I had babies, I read about the dangers of bisphenol, BPA and BPS. And then I said, okay, I don't want to give them things with plastic. So I started to stock up on things that were stainless steel. So I bought these. These are just stainless steel straws. When my son was really little, my mother-in-law was like, that's metal. He's a baby. And I was like, I know, I'll just hold it. You know, I was crazy about this kind of thing.
Yes, she was.
Still am a little bit crazy about that because I didn't want to, you know, expose them to the leaching chemicals in plastic. Now, I never thought twice about it when plastic straws or paper straws started to come out that like this could be worse. I just thought like, okay, it's uncomfortable though. I don't really like it because they turn soggy.
Yeah, it's like chewing cardboard.
And yes, and yeah, they nasty. Don't hold up, especially to the things that Clayton drinks, like
I get like a big ass, you know, cold brew.
Yes,
you know, like I'll get like a big ass coffee. That's what I ordered when they said, yeah. "What do you want?" I say, "Do you have a big ass size? Because I want that's the one that I want."
Uh huh.
And that straw does not survive.
That
entire drink. There's no way. And I want, or a big unsweetened iced tea, Dunkin' Donuts or something like that.
That is your favorite.
I love that, right? Yeah. That straw is not surviving half of that drink. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
It's garbage.
Go ahead, David.
And I was going to say, I hate when they, like, you put the straw in, you pull it out, and it sticks to your lips. Like, that drives me insane. So you're sitting there, like, pulling a straw off your lips.
What? Okay.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Right. Paper is stuck to my lip. Now I got this soggy, limp straw, dry, stuck to my lips.
But that stuff is toxic chemicals that stuck to your lip. And I'm going to show you the data because you think like, oh, okay, maybe that's kind of just as bad as plastic. No, it's many orders of magnitude worse. And at least plastic, do you ever have one of those? At least we all know someone who does this, who's like chews the heck out of their plastic straw, you know, like a big gulp or something. And then the plastic straw looks disgusting, like a piece of gum.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, at least that's mostly intact even after that person's masticated it, right? The paper straw will not do that. It breaks down so much that we are ingesting more of those forever chemicals. So here's the study. This is a really good example of climate policies that maybe were well-intentioned, but not thought out and make things worse. We're going to go over the study in detail in a minute, but let's just back up because the whole history of our hatred of plastic straws goes back to this viral video from 2015 where a biologist removed a straw from a sea turtle. This went viral and started this outrage about plastic straws. I'm going to only show you about 40 seconds of it where she goes, plastic, oh my God.
Plastic, oh. Is it a straw? Don't tell me it's a freaking straw. Because it looked like in Germany we have those with the black... with the black stripes, that would...
A straw.
Plastic straw.
Because... Okay. It's a really sad video. And sweet turtle. It's been viewed over, you know, millions of times. It's over 8 minutes long. And the poor thing does suffer as they try to get it out of their nose. But does that mean that plastic straws are actually the main thing polluting the earth, or worse for this turtle? No. In fact, plastic straws are estimated to make up 0.03% of the 9 million tons of plastic waste. If that's the case, our focus on straws seems very disproportionate, don't you think? Especially when you consider that plastic itself is less of an issue as waste management, because low-income countries only collect about 50% of their trash. That is the bigger problem. When countries, and Bjorn Lundberg's data shows this unequivocally, when a country increases its GDP and increases its prosperity, they are better able to handle their trash, and that trash doesn't end up in nature, which means that that's really the big problem, right? Making sure that other places can be prosperous. It's not necessarily plastic, because most plastic, even plastic that goes in the recycle bin, is not recycled. The best place for plastics is really in the incinerator if you buy it. In fact, you know, most countries, they don't recycle their plastics. So when you put it in the trash, that trash is burned up. That is a solved problem, right? That's not going to hurt the turtle. So this is a disproportionate reaction we're having to plastic straws. Once again, people who study these things know that the problem is not eliminating these things, but better management around the world and prosperity for all places. But we freaked out about plastic straw because that turtle got our hearts collectively. Okay, we'll give us that one. But now about those paper straws, they break down into a pulpy mess. And guess what is in that pulpy mess? Forever chemicals. We're talking about PFAS, or poly or pyrofluoroalkyl substances. I'm not sure if I pronounced all of the consonants right. These are called forever chemicals because your body takes a long time to process them out of your system. Plastic straws also have forever chemicals, but far less, and you're about to see it in a chart. Plus, again, at least they stay intact, even when you chew them to death, like maybe that one friend you have, or maybe that's your habit, I don't know. So back to the study, here are all the different types of straws. They got some at toy stores, some at variety stores, some at supermarket chains. Just they went around and collected paper, glass, bamboo, stainless steel, and plastic. These are researchers in Belgium, but we can say this is pretty representative of in and around Europe and the US and North America. Now, here is what they found. Look at the chart here, and this is a little bit hard to see, so I'm gonna walk you through it. Plastic straws, so this is like the different concentrations of chemicals that can leach out of these types of straws. See where it's segregated paper on the far left? Look how many chemicals are in these paper straws. It is a heck of a lot. The next line over says glass, and there actually is quite a lot of chemicals that can be leached out of glass. I guess the way it's treated later. Bamboo also has quite a few chemicals coming out of them. And if you want to break down the types of these chemicals, I recommend you read the study. Stainless steel, virtually nothing. So that's your best bet, right? Is to carry around these straws that I just showed you and reuse them. And then you're not going to hurt a turtle because it stays in your purse, right? And then plastic.
I have one in my truck.
Very good. Yeah, I carry these all the time. And then look how few chemicals are in plastic. So you know, I was freaking out about the wrong thing. I mean, there is chemicals here. I don't want those chemicals on a brand new baby. I don't regret having done that. Thankfully, I didn't go and get them paper straws. And we chose the stainless steel. But at the same time, we are collectively saying that paper is better. It is clearly not. By many orders of magnitude, they're terrible. Stainless steel, again, is the best straw, but again, plastics, which we all freak out at, is second best. That blows my mind.
That's crazy.
Plastics are nowhere near the demon that we thought they were. So here is what they concluded, that these forever chemicals were found to be present in almost all types of straws, but primarily in those made from plant-based material. So the bamboo ones, even those are bad. These eco-friendly plant-based straws are not necessarily a more sustainable alternative to plastic straws because they can be considered as additional sources of forever chemicals in humans and the environment. Because what if that paper straw, although the paper straw is not going to make it into the turtle's nose, it would just disintegrate, right? So 1 point for the paper straw for that. So again, we're exposing ourselves to more toxins with this straw shenanigans that we're putting ourselves through, and it makes our drinking experience so much worse. Let's all agree on that. I'm going to look at the chat now. So in YouTube, we put up a poll that asked, do you like paper straws? 14% of you say you do. You're lying. You just think that that's the right thing to say. Look at the chart again. That's the wrong thing to say. Do you like them now that you know that you're drinking toxins? How about a little toxins with your Starbucks?
86% say no, they don't like paper straws. Give me that one of the steel straws. Okay. I am not a fan of these. I don't like how they like feel against my teeth when I've like, I don't
But you
like
almost
it.
Never use straws.
No, I don't use straws ever really. So yeah, I don't care. Except when I get the big ass coffee at like a Dunkin' Donuts or something. I want
straw. Because the cold brew you like to.
Yeah, but that's, I know. Well, that depends if it's got that lid. But right. Anyway, but someone in the chat says, you know, Amazon or whatever, they sell the little straw pipe cleaners that go through the thing and you know, and cleans it out. So
They're a pain in the butt to clean. You have to use the pipe cleaners.
You're right. This is another example of like climate anxiety, right? We see a video about a turtle with a plastic straw up its nose, and then we think we're going to somehow, like the planet is going to be saved somehow because we're going to remove plastic straws from San Francisco and plastic
bags.
Well,
it's just, it wasn't thought through. Like, but somebody knew that. Like, okay, good, we're going to make wood straws or, you know, bamboo straws or pulp straws, and the public will buy it because they hate plastic. This is a great business model. Great. How do we make them? Well, we need all these toxins.
We put all these chemicals around it. We wrap it in chemicals.
Okay. Won't people think that that's worse? They won't know.
They won't know.
Don't worry. They don't care because people don't actually do the math. I mean, we can give you so many, like, go ahead. What does Anna say?
Well, Anna Espinosa says, you can chip a tooth with a metal straw. I know. That's what I'm thinking. Like, it just feels like I chip it and I'm not a fan.
I have no problem.
I know a guy that did that. Like,
really?
There was a local bar that I would go to all the time, and they, like, back when all this was going on, they replaced all their straws with the stainless steel straws, and like the very first day they did it, a guy I know like chipped his tooth.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh. Well, reaction I just had.
Yeah,
I'm a dick.
I was gonna say, it also seems like it'd burn your lips drinking hot coffee through it. You know, like it would eat up.
Well, you shouldn't do that.
You can't do that.
Why would you use?
Yeah, you can't. Don't do that. Don't listen to him. He's full. Don't do.
Because I have it. So I have a metal straw. Let me just like get my. I have one that has a little filter on the bottom, and you put coffee in your cup with just the grounds, and you drink it, and it sips the grounds out of the coffee through the little filter. So that's for camping.
Oh,
why don't you just get a cup of coffee? Oh,
because I'm camping.
No, he's just, he likes
to
drink.
I'm in the wilderness, man.
He likes to drink the grounds, Philip. Okay. Let him drink the dirt, okay? He's a mountain man.
I can't eat mud anymore.
All of your behaviors are perplexing me.
I know. He's got straws dry stuck to his lips. He's licking newspapers. He's eating coffee grounds. What the hell's going on?
He's not housebroken.
When I worked, and someone was saying, what about paper cups? What about paper cups? Those are, that's another whole
just
question.
Just as bad.
Just as bad. And I hate paper cups for coffee. When I used to work at Fox News, and I'd be there doing the morning show, I anchored the morning show, Fox and Friends. We get there butt ass early, you know, like 3 a.m. And whichever one of us got in kind of early, whether it was Dave or I or Tucker or I, whatever, whoever got there first, we would usually go and like buy a round of coffee for everyone. Right. And they always had, we always loved like the Dunkin' Donuts. Styrofoam cups, styrofoam. And it just, I don't know, it just made the coffee so much better. I hate the paper cups.
Oh,
also.
I disagree.
I don't know. Like
100%. No, I did not like the styrofoam. And we recently were in one country. Where were we? We were in France, and we got Starbucks, and the cup was made of this paper, the top,
the
instead
lid.
Of the plastic lid that you normally get at a Starbucks. It was a paper lid. And that also was all kinds of wrong. And I'm sure I ingested, a good amount of forever chemicals with that because It was just well-intentioned. Go.
Tom says,
wrong.
At Fox, did you just show up late every day so you didn't have to buy the round of cup? No. I was there. Good point. But no, we were always, we'd always flip-flop like buying coffee. So, but yeah, and my friend Dave, who was one of my co-hosts at Fox for a while, he would, he loved styrofoam so much that he like kept an extra styrofoam cup nearby because he just loved the way that coffee tasted in a styrofoam cup.
Oh, I was telling the kids the other day that like when we were kids, we had cup of noodles came in styrofoam, remember?
Oh yeah.
And then styrofoam, you know, went out of fashion and, but yeah, that was the way. And now the paper ones burn your hands because styrofoam at least was a bit more insulating.
Oh my God.
You know, anyway. I'm not going to wax poetic about like packaging from the 80s, but at the same time, I don't think we're getting it better. You know, we could go down the list of things that like we thought were better and they're not, like plastic bags. Carbon emissions in California went up after they banned plastic due to the energy needs to produce more paper bags. You know, focus on solar panels, which have a very high carbon footprint, take a lot of water to make and ship. Our focus on electric cars, which use more precious metals, cause more deaths from cobalt mining in the Congo than gas-powered cars. So we could go on. You know, of course, we all want cleaner resources, but we're doing it wrong because climate anxiety is not rational thought. And so we owe ourselves rational thought. This straw thing is just a good example of how if it had been left alone, we could maybe focus on increasing prosperity of developed nations so that they can better handle their trash instead of what we've put ourselves through. Like, I know this not this is a first world problem, right? But I hate paper straws. So, you know, there is a lot of research also about the biodegradable plastic and how actually it can be a good thing for the earth by providing food for microbiomes of the sea, but we'll leave that for another day. So I'm just going to end with this meme that is funny, but it doesn't seem so far off base. This is not a real McDonald's ad, but they're saying, you told us that you didn't like disposable plastic drinking straws. We listen. From 2019, all of our straws will be made of 100% ivory. Right. It feels like that's exactly what we did.
Yeah.
I didn't make up that meme. I just found it online.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, we're doing it wrong.
Love it. Let us know. You can take the poll. Do you like paper straws? Let us know in the chat. We have 8,000 votes so far, which I love. All right. And we've got one more story we're going to get to. Did Europe just take a big step towards eliminating personal freedom and free speech with the passage of the Digital Services Act? Yes, it's now law and enforceable in Europe. Get ready for more clampdowns on personal freedom. We'll get there in a second. But first, hey, we got a store. And we do not sell plastic straws or paper straws in our store. We have really high quality stuff that doesn't leach forever chemicals if you eat it. Actually, I don't know. But if you eat one of those hats, I let me know. Tell me later.
Don't do that.
But don't, you know, don't eat the shirts or anything like that. But if you go to redactedstore.com, you can support independent journalism and what we do here and being able to support amazing people like Vanessa Beely and Patrick Lancaster and other great guests that we have here on the show and give voice to these stories and coverage that you're not going to see in the mainstream media. Again, we're not funded by any billionaires or anything. It's just supported by you guys. So if you want to support our show, you can do so by going to redactedstore.com, picking up some merch. Again, redactedstore.com. Well, did Europe just take a big step to eliminate personal freedoms and free speech with the passage and the now enforcement of the Digital Services Act? European Union Commissioner Thierry Breton says this will strengthen democracy by protecting you from dangerous online content. Listen.
Today, the Digital Services Act, the so-called DSA, becomes legally enforceable for very large online platforms and search engines. These systemic platforms play a very, very important role on our daily life. And it is really the time now for Europe, for us, to set our own rules. The DSA is here to protect free speech against arbitrary decisions. And at the same time, to protect our citizens and democracies against illegal content.
Well, David Thunder is our next guest, and he says this is an attack on free speech and liberty. David is a researcher and lecturer in political philosophy and joins us now, and who writes on his Substack all about freedom. Thought you were the perfect guest to come on and talk about this. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Clayton. Great to be here.
So, David, can you explain to our audience exactly what the Digital Services Act is, and now it is fully enforceable by the European Commission?
Sure. The Digital Services Act is a law that has been introduced by the European Union and that was planned and promoted by the current president of the Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, as well as Thierry Breton, the European Internal Market Commissioner. And basically, the goal of this law is to update current regulations of the European Union of online content, the regulation specifically of illegal content such as misinformation, disinformation, hate speech, and child pornography, and those kinds of issues. So that's basically the goal of the legislation, is to clamp down on illegal content on the internet.
And who gets to decide what is illegal content? What is the governing body that's going to be sitting in a room deciding what content is safe for us and is legal?
Well, the jurisdiction or the competent authorities will be divided between the European Commission and those that it nominates on one hand, and the national member states, the member states of the European Union on the other. It'll be a divided authority. But when it comes to the large social media companies such as Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Google, the very large ones, which are defined as very large online platforms, the European Commission will be responsible for policing issues like hate speech and disinformation. So personally, I find this to be very worrying, because it puts in law, in European law, the principle that very vague categories such as disinformation and hate speech that are notoriously vulnerable to politicization will effectively be enforced at a Europe-wide level through an army of fact checkers that are endorsed and legitimated by the European Commission. So basically, we're handing our freedom of expression to a European bureaucracy to basically, what they could do is they can contact a service provider or an online platform, and they can flag up content that they consider to be illegal. It could be hate speech, for example, or else it could be disinformation. And that once they flag that, then the service provider or the platform is obligated in law to take down that content.
Wow.
Right. So that's that has huge implications for freedom of expression, because essentially petty bureaucrats who are running these fact-checking organizations will be deciding, in conjunction with the European Commission, what counts as acceptable and unacceptable speech on the internet.
Well, Thierry Breton, he says in a series of tweets to kind of clarify the position on this. He's like, don't worry. You know, you have nothing to worry about here. We're not going to do anything nefarious at all. Just reading through his string of tweets on this, he says, my services and I will thoroughly enforce the DSCA, the DSA, and fully use our new powers to investigate and sanction platforms where warranted. Comply with the DSA is not a punishment. It's an opportunity, David, for platforms to reinforce their trustworthiness. If I ever heard like something written by a politician, I mean, that is like the perfect sentence. It's an opportunity for platforms to reinforce their trustworthiness. Child protection will be an enforcement priority, as will be fighting disinformation, including pro-Russian propaganda, in particular as we are entering a period of elections in Europe. So they're going to be on the lookout for any sort of pro-Russian propaganda. They fully want to be in the tank, promoting a proxy war in Ukraine. I don't know, but who gets to decide what is pro-Russian propaganda?
Well, this is the issue. The fundamental issue with these sorts of laws is they take these kind of nebulous categories that sound very innocent to a lot of people, like disinformation or hate speech, and they enshrine them as principles of law that then must be interpreted by public officials and bureaucrats and judges. And of course, the issue is, as we've seen over the last few years, concepts like disinformation can be very easily interpreted to advance a particular polemical political vision of reality. So we saw, for example, the lab leak theory or hypothesis about the virus, about the coronavirus, that was clamped down on by Facebook, right, based on the idea that it was disinformation or misinformation. And later on, now it's almost a consensus position among many experts that, in fact, the lab leak theory is extremely plausible and probable. So that was one example. Another example was the vaccines that we saw, okay, with vaccine efficacy. Anyone who questioned whether vaccines could block transmission, a lot of them were clamped down on as purveyors of disinformation. And of course, it turned out that the vaccines, the COVID vaccines, failed to stop transmission. And I could go on and cite lots of other examples of things that were considered disinformation at the time by official sources. And later on, science moved on, it moved on. And, you know, suddenly we realized that these were actually, you know, these were true. They were not disinformation. So politicians, public officials, political organizations, people in power will use these categories to advance their own narratives. And the net effect of this kind of act, this Digital Services Act, is to empower a bureaucracy to go around protecting the official narrative that is favored by the European Union, European Commission, on issues like the Ukraine war with Russia, issues like any kind of future pandemic, and issues like, you know, transgender ideology and politics. All of these issues, instead of being just fought out in the public sphere in a democratic manner, we're going to have basically an army of bureaucrats, of fact checkers, telling us what the correct position is in advance.
I mean, it sounds like a Trojan horse plan. To really, you know, to stick these bureaucrats into every faction of our online and digital lives, from digital surveillance of digital, you know, ID systems being set up, you know, with the Dia app in Ukraine, going cashless, removing us from any sort of a cash-based society, make sure everything is being monitored and watched at all times by the, I mean, it feels very much like 1984, or almost reminds me of like that famous Apple ad from the Super Bowl many, many moons ago, you know, against IBM. It's just like this black and white face on a wall that's controlling all of us. And it's terrifying. And if you think about the largest purveyors of misinformation during COVID, during the Ukraine war, have been the official narratives. The biggest purveyors of propaganda, the biggest liars, as Senator Rand Paul in the United States has said, the biggest liars are the United States government. They're the biggest perpetrators of propaganda. So they are going to be the purveyors of truth?
Well, this is the issue, of course. I mean, the uncomfortable truth that some people don't like to accept, but it's an obvious truth, is that putting someone in a position of power or authority does not guarantee that they'll get things right. They're all human, and we're all human. It doesn't matter how many degrees you have. It doesn't matter if you've been appointed by the European Commission. You can get things badly wrong. And people have gotten things badly wrong in the highest positions of power and authority. And one of the most notorious examples is their enthusiastic advocacy of lockdowns, which we're now seeing have created devastating effects in society that we'll be suffering for generations.
Hallelujah.
Including educational deficits for young people, you know, psychological trauma from isolation and loneliness, untreated illnesses, and the list goes on. But I think, yes, I agree that in a sense, this particular Digital Services Act is a Trojan horse in the sense that it's dressed up in the language of, you know, we want to go against child pornography. We want to make sure that information is kind of responsibly used, and we want more transparency and so on. But in reality, as I said, essentially what it does is it puts ordinary users of Twitter and Facebook at the mercy of faceless bureaucrats, not only in the social media companies now, but also in a government organization that can then instruct the social media companies. And by the way, they have enormous enforcement powers because they can fine social media companies up to 6% of their annual global turnover, for failing to comply with their policies or not taking sufficient action against, you know, disinformation or hate speech and so on. So I think that we are facing a really dystopian possibly dystopian future in the European Union regarding, you know, freedom of expression. And maybe the one bright cloud, you know, the little lining in the cloud, you know, the bright lining in the gray cloud, is that Article 11 of the European Charter of Fundamental Rights, which is on freedom of expression, says that European citizens have the right to receive and impart information without interference by public authorities. So that remains in place. So I think we may be in, facing a legal battle very soon, and hopefully there will be these bureaucrats, unelected bureaucrats, will be taken to account for this really draconian piece, draconian assault on freedom of expression, maybe even using your existing European law. That, well, the, this Charter of Fundamental Rights could be a weapon to use against this legislation.
Well, I mean, if you try right now, if you try to go to RT.com, RussiaToday.com, if you live in the European Union, good luck. You won't be able to access it unless you use a, unless you're using a VPN. So if you're trying to access certain websites in the European Union right now, good luck. You're going to find a lot of it is already blocked. So they're already in violation of getting, you know, of this and getting information freely, freely and openly to the citizens of the European Union. I want to point you to one article, though, in this Digital Services Act that stood out to me going through it, which was Article 91, which says, in times of crisis, there might be a need for certain specific measures to be taken urgently by providers of very large online platforms. So think pandemic, think war, whatever they want, you know, climate, you know, some sort of a climate lockdown, in addition to measures they would need to be taking in view of their other obligations under this regulation. In that regard, a crisis should be considered to occur when extraordinary circumstances occur that can lead to a serious threat to public security or public health. And of course, they could use this as an umbrella to do really draconian things. No?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm not entirely clear on what, like, the extra powers that they give, because it seems to me they already have incredible powers,
right,
to, you know, because they can demand that these companies provide annual reports on their policing of disinformation and hate speech, and then they can fine them up to 6% of their, you know, annual income or turnover. You know, that to me is already an incredible power to be given to faceless bureaucrats, unelected bureaucrats. But now they also have a clause in there that says that they can declare an emergency. And in the event of declaring an emergency, then they can basically instruct these platforms to censor any kind of information that might be deemed a threat to public order, or might be deemed a threat, a public threat. And, you know, in a sense, they're trying to cover all their bases. I'm not sure from a legal perspective why they need to be able to declare emergencies in this particular case, because it seems like they already have a lot of power. But overall, it's clear that that any citizen who cares about freedom of expression, freedom of speech, and indeed the future of a free way of life should be very, very, very concerned about the Digital Services Act. And I think our conversation here could be a good way of galvanizing awareness, public awareness of this issue, because the act is in place. It's going to probably be applied. But hopefully the very fact that we're thinking about it and that citizens are aware of it will make them seek other avenues for finding information and not blindly trust whatever they see on the internet, especially when they know that it's been filtered and fact-checked by these, you know, these bureaucrats. So awareness is one way to combat this sort of, these sorts of, you know, authoritarian measures. Right. You know, on the ground, grassroots, people on the ground organizing, Facebook, WhatsApp groups, whatever it takes to bypass these sorts of mechanisms of control and censorship.
David, great to have you on the show. Thanks for being a first-time guest.
Thank
here
you.
On Redacted. Great analysis, and we look forward to further coverage on this as the days unfold. Thanks again.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
And our thanks to all of you for being a part of our show and allowing us to give voice to these amazing journalists and researchers that the Western media totally ignores. So when you support our show, when you like and subscribe to our show, that really, really helps us get out to a much larger audience. So I just want to say thank you for subscribing. We had tens of thousands of you subscribe in the month of August. So thank you very much for that. And we really hope to be able to do some amazing journalism and give voice to amazing journalists here as the fall unfolds and as election season kicks into high gear. We are really ramping things up here. So thank you guys so much for subscribing, being a part of our community here at Redacted. And once again, we do have a community that we would love for you to join as well. For the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can sign up and become part of our Redacted Rebellion. Just go over to redacted.inc. And again, you can totally subscribe for free. But if you would like to support what we do here, we're not backed by billionaires. You can join our Redacted community. You get access to exclusive videos and content before anyone else, live streams, and our new clubs that we're launching, all for Redacted community members that will not be published anywhere else. So please check that out. Redacted.inc is the place to go. And thank you guys so much for your support. We'll be back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday. Until then, have a great night, everyone. Bye now.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.